Thursday, August 16th, 2018, LA podcast. I'm Hayes Davenport. I'm here with just Scott Frazier. But we do have it. Sorry, I don't mean it like that.
I don't know. I'm just going to look away from you for a second.
We do have.
You know, this Alyssa thing has really just shaken me to my core.
I know. We've never talked about it. Alyssa is out for this bonus episode. She'll be back for our next one. We do have a guest coming up later in the show. Laura Nelson, transportation reporter for the LA Times. Huge get.
Yeah, we had so much for this week that we had to go into extra innings.
Yes.
Alyssa said, you guys take this one.
Right, because we have...
She's like we Kershaw, have a guest, and she's done like a perfect eight innings.
She's handed it off to... and my understanding is that the Dodgers' bullpen is very bad right now, and specifically blew a huge lead for Kershaw just this week, so that might be a great analogy.
Yep.
We have a guest, a very exciting guest, who will tip once we're sure it's going to happen, coming up for next week. And so we had to get this episode out because there's just been so much news. We just had to cover everything. So we're going to do our famous time crisis that we did once before.
Time crisis.
And so we're going to budget a certain number of minutes, very few, for each topic before we get to our guest.
Time crisis on infinite Earths.
We're first going to talk about how LA is going to be a typhoon. We're going to see a lot of typhoons in LA very soon. How many minutes? Four?
Yeah.
Okay. Start now.
Okay. So first of all, I'm going to start with a question to you, which is why do we call hurricanes something different depending on where they are in the world?
That's the same thing. A typhoon is the same thing as a hurricane.
And what is the other one? Tropical cyclone. Anyway, so if you think about LA this summer, then you think about the fact that it's been really disgustingly hot, but it's also been much more humid than normal LA.
I go for runs now, and I'm just gushing.
I walk outside and I'm sweating, and it's terrible. And it's gross, and I feel terrible all day.
Why is it so humid?
It's really humid because normally the Pacific where California is, ranging all the way actually from Southern California up to Northern California, is typically known for its cold water temperatures.
This was a surprise to me when I moved out here. I was like, oh, it's the beach. Everyone can like swim in the ocean. It's colder here than it is on like the Northeast.
Yeah. Because the Pacific Ocean is enormous, and so the water temperature is much colder than it is elsewhere. Basically, what's happening now this summer is that because of climate change, we've seen a gradual warming in the water temperature. Here, it has actually cracked 80 degrees, the temperature of the Pacific Ocean.
That's crazy.
In some places.
That's like bath water.
For the first time, I think, in recorded history.
Oh, my God.
There have been tropical storm events in LA's history. There was a Long Beach tropical depression in the 30s, I think. But they're extremely uncommon. And a big part of the reason is because in order to sustain a seasonal tropical storm season like there is on the southeast United States, the water temperatures need to regularly cross that 80 degree threshold. So there was a story in the Santa Maria Times recently that was written by a meteorologist from the PG&E utility, and he was saying that basically this is what the future of LA and Southern California could look like.
Yeah.
We start exceeding that threshold on a regular basis, then we're talking about potentially having major tropical storms on a yearly basis.
So were that to happen, does that mean we wouldn't have droughts anymore?
Who knows? Honestly, that is a good question.
Could be a year of drought punctuated by one disastrous hurricane every year.
One incredibly destructive storm that does very little to replenish our actual groundwater supplies or things like that. Who knows? Yeah. As they say, when we had our very large drought-busting winter a couple of years ago, we were getting too much rain in Southern California and not enough in Northern California. I remember them saying because a lot of our actual water storage needs to be in the form of snowpack in the mountains.
Yeah.
And that wasn't happening. So who knows if even having those kind of storms down here would help.
Wow. Time crisis.
That's your Blade Runner 2049 version of LA, I guess. I mean, maybe that's Blade Runner 2033.
Yes. Okay. We want to talk about Sebastian Ridley Thomas. Boy, can he just not stay out of the news. So Sebastian Ridley
Thomas. Time crisis.
Time crisis. We mentioned at the time that Sebastian Ridley Thomas got into, first he resigned from the state assembly for undisclosed reasons. He said for health reasons. We said at the time that there were a lot of rumors going around. I was a little nervous at the time talking about this. I was like, are we rumor mongering too much? It's our first episode. Is this really a standard we want to set? It turned out I was too conservative.
Yep.
And then he got in another scandal this past couple weeks where he got a job at USC, even though he was supposed to be in this serious health situation. And it seemed like USC might have laundered some $100,000 from his father to him. It's too long to talk about it in 4 minutes. We can't go back. You have to go back to old episodes to learn the whole scandal.
Episode one.
Anyway, we were kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. I said, I bet we're going to find out why Sebastian Ridley Thomas resigned from the state assembly in the first place. Today, Wednesday, we did.
Yep.
There, an article came out saying that he was under investigation for sexual harassment at the time that he was hired at USC and also at the time that he resigned from the state assembly. I mean, duh.
Yep.
In retrospect, it was very obvious that something like this was going on. We should
never doubt our petty dishing again. No,
it's Blink. If you read Blink, your instincts are always correct, especially when it comes to damaging gossip.
What bothers me about this story is it makes me think, like, damn, there are no good fixers. Where are the scandal fixers out there? Where's Kerry Washington when you need her, right?
It just happened. It seemed to happen so clumsily when he applied for the USC job. Sebastian Ridley Thomas or his father did not tell anyone at USC. They said that he was being investigated for sexual harassment. If we guess that he probably was, you'd think someone at USC could have jumped to that conclusion as well. But apparently it was two accusations, one for inappropriate physical contact, one for some other reason. The identities of the people who made these accusations have not been revealed. Seems like there will probably be more to this story. Feels like totally an unforced error. Like we said in our first episode of this show, if he had just disappeared from the political scene, from
LA, there would have been no reason.
If he'd gotten the job somewhere else, he physically dislodged the other shoe from this scandal. He
pulled it down.
It was stuck in the tree, and he had to get back up in there to get this other job at USC, and managed to knock it out. So now everyone is talking about the sexual harassment stuff, which would have completely vanished.
Yeah, and so one of the interesting things to me that came up in the Times story is that Anthony Rendon, the Speaker of the Assembly, had said at the time basically that he was, sad to see Sebastian Ridley Thomas going and, wish him all the best with his health, and then declined to comment on whether or not he was aware, as you would think that he would be as Speaker of the Assembly, that the assembly member was under investigation.
Yes. I will comment in this case for Anthony Rendon, assembly speaker. He knew
and declined to say anything about it. Sebastian Ridley Thomas's people said that's not why he left still.
Oh, they are still saying yes, that it was because of his health issues. It just so happened at the exact same time that he was being accused of sexual harassment by two different people.
Which we did not mention.
Yes.
That seems, I would actually say what we said last time and the time before, I bet there's more to come
on this. Yes.
I bet we will find out Absolutely. Yet more.
And at the same time, also disgraced assembly member Matt DeBobne, who you may remember from our first episode, had a very bad trip to Vegas where he trapped a woman in the bathroom and took out his penis and masturbated to completion in front of her, is now suing his accuser for defamation yeah. at the same time as an investigation sort of lent a lot of credence to her story, right. correct?
Yes, absolutely. And this is just before we move on, this yeah. it seems like this is now the move. In the Me Too scandals.
Don't just say you didn't do it, now you have to
sue. I think we've actually seen the a lot of the accusations start to trickle to, I don't know, we're not seeing as many of them as we were a couple months ago, but now that yeah. there's kind of a media lull, it seems like a lot of these men are trying to turn the tables on the people who have accused them and really put them in a tight spot.
Yep. We've talked about the Sheriff's Department too much. Unfortunately, there's more news about them this week, so this is going to be the bonus LA Sheriff's Department minute.
We're going to do a new thing called the Sheriff's Department and One, where we just give you one, we give you one scandal, and then we just throw in another one on top because we're so nice, and we just
one
have,
plus the penalty.
We
for
have
the
we
department.
Have so many Sheriff's Department scandals that we just can't spend that much time on all.
Starting. Right now, Lee Baca, the convicted felon who used to be sheriff before current sheriff Jim McDonnell, is claiming after his conviction, that he couldn't serve his sentencing because he has advanced Alzheimer's.
He also was using that as the reasoning why he was not guilty of lying to federal prosecutors because he could not be held responsible for
yes.
being able to have the intent to lie.
Is in such like disastrous mental shape that he couldn't
he has
be
no
responsible
idea
for anything he did.
If what he's saying is true.
That's not the news. The news is that he just joined the faculty at the University of Los Angeles College of Divinity.
In Compton.
Yes. They talked about how he's a gifted teacher. He has the rare ability to take the most complex subject and make it seem simple. He is going to be teaching classes. This person who supposedly has very advanced Alzheimer's. People you just can't resist taking these cushy academic jobs, I guess, even when it's very damaging to other claims that you're trying to publicly make about whether you're able to keep a job at all.
It is.
Baca and Ridley Thomas is the same story.
It is completely crazy to me. And this is... My favorite part of their statement is, the sheriff has learned how to change the behavior of people by making teaching small.
Oh, my God.
I don't know. You could describe his tenure at the LA yes. Sheriff's Department that way, but that's not
this is another,
how I would say.
Like we talked about Sebastian Ridley Thomas's college movie where he has to be his teacher and a student at the same time. The Lee Baca one is him having to simultaneously be a faculty member and pretend to have advanced Alzheimer's.
Yeah,
to avoid going to jail. Do quickly do the and one with the sheriff's department.
Okay, we have the and one for this week's sheriff's department scandal is that a former sheriff's deputy just pled guilty to federal charges that he was helping to smuggle meth, cocaine, and weed for payments.
You say former sheriff's deputy. He was a sheriff's deputy at the time he was doing this.
At the time
smuggling.
He was doing this.
Yes.
Yes. Payments for up to $250,000 and was caught in an FBI sting saying that he would use his position as a law enforcement officer to help smuggle drugs across state lines. That's your and one this week. We will for sure be back with another one next week.
Okay. Here we go. James Butts, mayor of Englewood. Three minutes. Okay.
Aspiring supervillain.
Yes.
James Butts.
James Butts wants to turn Englewood into just an unbroken string of professional sports stadiums. He is trying to get the Clippers arena set up there. Steve Ballmer, Clippers owner, is on board. They're like making real progress.
They have an
like.
Exclusive negotiating agreement
yes.
that stretches through the end of the Clippers contract in Staples Center.
Lots of people in Englewood are not happy about this. They would like to live there.
Right.
They would like to. They have this crazy fringe position. They would like to continue living in the city. James Butts deals with a lot of these protesters at city council meetings. And the controversy this week is he was caught on video. I know, like, you know, on the official city council video at the very end of a city council meeting, telling a protester.
I think you should just play it.
I'll play it.
So, thank you, everybody. And with that, we're adjourned.
And go choke yourself, Diana.
Go choke yourself. I don't.
Diana
even...
Zambrano is a protester who complained at the city council meeting that James Butts was giving the Clippers access to public land to hold a press conference. And at the end of the meeting, James Butts very clearly says, and go choke yourself, Diana, into a live mic.
And it was the video that you just played is like a cell phone video, right?
No, it's not. It's the official video. Maybe it's a cell phone video of the official video, okay, but it is the official video because
right.
It was then re-edited. And so when they re-released yes. the official video, that was cut out.
It was cut out.
And Go Choke Yourself, Diana was cut out of the official record.
Which is probably illegal. There's probably no recourse that anyone can do about it because they're not actually putting up this video in response to a public records request. They are just sort of putting it up as a matter of course. So yes. There's not like anything requiring them to keep the original unedited version containing Mayor Butts's comments. However, it's legally iffy, to say the least, to actually remove something from the public record for yes, no reason even, other than
especially
that.
Removing and go choke yourself.
For yeah. no reason other than that your mayor decided to tell a member of the public to go choke herself.
Diana, for her part, says, I don't appreciate anyone, not even the mayor, suggesting that I choke myself in a public meeting.
Not even the mayor.
Not even the mayor is allowed to tell Diana to choke herself. What's the new lawsuit? There's another new lawsuit in Inglewood.
Oh, there's yet another lawsuit that Butts and his team called one in a series of frivolous lawsuits about the manner in which Inglewood negotiated the terms of the exclusive negotiating agreement with the Clippers.
Okay.
So we've got, I think that's up to like four or five different yeah. lawsuits against that at this point.
Okay. The good time crisis. We are now going to go to our great conversation. We talked about new security screening on Metro. Metro is collaborating with the TSA to do all these kind of new security measures. And
it's a mashup.
Yes, it's the ultimate collab between two of the biggest names in the game, Metro and TSA. And we have Laura Nelson, LA Times transit reporter, so you better believe we also talked about scooters. And that is right now. Hi, Laura.
Hello.
Laura Nelson, LA Times transportation reporter, plant mother, what else?
Cat.
Kansan.
Stay away from
yeah,
her.
Yeah, allergic to cats, we learned.
Kansan,
that's a big one.
Mm-hmm. Jayhawk.
Times
so many of you guys, yeah. so many of you times people. That's right.
Yeah.
Labor rabble rouser.
Yeah. Are you still a Jayhawk if you didn't go there?
Yeah, it's kind of like
a cultural
thing.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Why is it you think that so many LA Times reporters come from the Midwest? I can only think of three.
Well, as we say in journalism, 1-2 trend.
So. Yes. Yes. Okay. Good.
I don't know. I think there's something about the Midwest that makes people want to leave
uh-huh.
and move to California.
Yeah.
That's what my 10-year LA anniversary is next week.
Including college, right?
Yes,
you came here to go to
college.
USC.
Yeah. yeah. So next week is my 10-year mark. So I saw California and I was like, I'm going to move there.
Yeah.
I'm never leaving. And that was a lot of people go through that.
Sure.
So, 10 years. Yeah. I feel like you made it at this point.
I think well, passed, I don't want to jinx anything.
You've passed like the most difficult milestones. I feel like.
Yeah. You know, found an apartment, found a job.
An apartment.
Is it rent controlled?
It is.
Okay. So you have to live there forever.
I've lived there for 6 years and I'm going to die there.
Laura was also the first guest on an aborted first version of this podcast. Yeah,
did that ever run?
No, this was it was a pilot for a podcast network. It was going to be
they
like...
They heard me and they're like, we don't want
to
do
yeah,
this.
Yeah, we're like,
anymore.
We just have to...
Second thoughts.
Yeah, let's wait a couple years and then do something else.
You know, it'll come back around though when you do like the 25th anniversary box set of the LA podcast, or the, yes. whatever the pod or the box set. Right.
It's still on. I still have the file somewhere on my computer.
My 29th year of covering transportation. <in LA. laughs>
At that point, you'll just have like critiques from readers injected directly into your bloodstream.
It sometimes feels that way.
Yes.
So, Lara, you wrote a piece this week. You wrote a bunch of pieces this week, but one was about the Metro. Seems to think that a problem that they have in the subway system is not enough security screening. And they are collaborating with the very popular federal agency, the TSA, to increase... They've adopted millimeter wave technology, and they are going to be screening passengers from a distance. You don't... It seems like you don't have to walk through any... right. like beeping gate or anything. They'll do it without you knowing, they'll x-ray you essentially from afar. Talk about this technology. Talk about what Metro is doing.
Yeah, so for more than a year, Metro has been working with the TSA to test a couple different types of basically what is like an explosives screening.
Okay.
It's designed to... It uses millimeter wave technology, basically radio waves, to look underneath your clothes and see if you have like a suicide vest or a hidden weapon or something else that you have like underneath your jacket or in a pocket that could be used to create what they call a mass casualty event. So basically a terror attack. And the TSA has been partnering with different transit agencies around the country to test out the technologies that they think, that the TSA thinks are like the best ones.
Uh-huh.
They go through a screening at the TSA's facility on the East Coast. The TSA signs off, and then they had been providing money to different agencies around the country to test them in their cities. And LA Metro has been one of the main agencies that's been working with them.
And I assume this won't will this cost them anything, or is this all federal money?
No, this is all local money. I actually spent most of the day yesterday trying to find out how much they'd spent because they didn't even want to disclose that for security reasons.
Did you find out?
$428,000.
Oh.
They wouldn't say how many units.
Sounds like a deal. That was way less than
I mean, for Metro these days, that's a very small amount of money. Like almost any initiative that they undertake costs at least 1.5. Yeah. It's, I don't want to call it chump change, but it's a very small amount of money. And it's funded through local sales tax revenue. So when you go to the store and you buy, you know, microphone or whatever, like that money.
That's what I buy mostly.
Yeah.
So it seems like
to get back to Metro. Yeah.
The major impacts here are more in terms of the operations of the system as opposed to budgetary. There were some things in the story that you wrote about this that I thought were very interesting. You noted you had asked Metro to comment on how they were going to use the information that they're getting from this system, and they didn't comment on that.
So there are some questions. Basically, the way the system works is it's contained in like a rolling case that looks like a production, like a kind of a black case with silver buckles, like you would see at like a concert.
Like a magician would roll out.
Sure. Yeah, one of those situations. And it has a camera mounted to the front and the little thing that emits the waves, and it scans people. The way they were demonstrating it earlier this week is scanning people as they're coming down the escalator into the Metro station. So it's a good opportunity to like look at people essentially one by one, but without forcing them to stop and like take off their shoes or line up or whatever. And it uses these waves to scan their body, and it creates kind of like a rough outline of your body. You can't see any anatomical detail. No, like, you can't see anything except the outline of the body.
No penis, is what you're saying.
And if you have something, they had these people wearing these kind of large blue smocks.
This will be great for Scott.
we're riding. I'm sorry, this isn't funny.
Yeah, this is Scott's like chosen attire.
Yeah,
Scott, you would have loved this. They had a series of people wearing like those large blue artist smocks, and underneath them they had like ceramic plates strapped to their body, and they rode the escalators over and over again into the entrance to the subway at Union Station, and to show us that the technology could pick up like. It shows on the little green outline that there's like a black box somewhere on your body that like suggests that there might be something there. Mm-hmm. But the questions that Metro wouldn't answer yesterday are about what happens once the black
there's a positive
box
reading.
Pops up. Yeah. Like they're saying that they're not stopping passengers. They're not. But if something shows up as possibly like a suicide vessel,
wow, they're not stopping passengers. So if they see a suicide vessel, it'd just be like, wow, that's going to be really bad.
Well, so that's certainly not what they're going to be doing. But they said that there's one officer who runs the machine, and then there's other officers who will be nearby with bomb sniffing dogs, and their job will be to like, you know, try to determine whether there's an explosive strap to someone. But beyond that, they wouldn't say. What happens, for example, if they detect like a handgun on someone and you are legally licensed to carry? Technically in California, you're not supposed to have it hidden beneath your jacket, but like, is that a situation where they would stop someone? What would happen to those people? They wouldn't answer those questions. They also said that you have the option of opting out of the security screening because they will be putting up signs that tell people that like the screening is going on. They won't do it without people knowing is what they're saying. But the option, if you don't want to be screened, is that you don't get to take the train.
Uh-huh. So that and that's like the kind of opt out that they already do on like, for instance, the Red Line. They have no problem with like shutting down just entrances when they're doing special events on Hollywood Boulevard. They had like the Star Wars thing where they just shut down everything and they made you walk through a metal detector if you wanted to come out of Hollywood and Vine. I really, at that point, I had the exact same question that I have about this, which is like, what are they going to do if I have something that makes the metal detector go off? I had no idea that this was happening. I'm just trying to get out of the station and go to Trader Joe's.
Right.
What are they like? What are they planning on doing with this information? And doesn't it potentially, if somebody does have like an improvised explosive device or whatever, God forbid, in the train station, and they're surrounded by thousands of other people, does detection cause them to then like blow it up immediately? Like, what happens at the point of detection is really what I'm most curious about.
Metro says that they aren't sure yet. They haven't deployed these yet. They just announced that they'd purchase them, and they won't be putting them into play until later this year. And they said yesterday that, you know, by the time that they're out in the world being used, they'll have a better policy in place about what the different situations and how they would work. But the agency has been
pretty... Was it a limited time offer or something? So they were just like, we got to grab these things before the price goes up. Then we'll figure out what to do with them later.
I mean, it was very newsy that Metro is the first city in the country. LA is the first city in the country to be using this technology. So that was probably an incentive.
To who? Who is like, oh, well, now that they have this remote screening technology, I'll certainly want to patronize their service.
The TSA has a like clearly vested interest in trying to get more systems to use this kind of technology. I actually think it's funny that Pekoski, the guy who's the head of the David Pekoski, who's the head of the TSA, has been so much in the news lately. He had the stolen plane thing up in Washington.
Right.
Where he had to talk about how that happened and how the federal government handled that. Then he was also in the LA Times today about the Quiet Skies program where the federal government is essentially profiling people based on where they travel in the world.
Uh-huh.
And now you have this where he's saying, oh, well, we really need to make our public transportation system more secure. LA is the first people to have been on board and have actually purchased the system that we recommended that they purchased. It's interesting. It seems like it, to me, is coming in advance of anticipated greater federal local security cooperation in advance of the Olympics.
Sure.
I'm not sure if that has been mentioned in any context with respect to this yet, but I imagine that is on someone's mind at Metro.
That's a totally reasonable concern, right? I mean, nothing is a bigger world stage than the Olympics. And
right.
I will say, I mean, the TSA says the point of these programs is to make sure that you stay ahead of whatever possible attacks might be coming. I know LA has a smaller rail system than a lot of cities, but it is very, despite all the jokes about LA not having a subway, it's very heavily used.
Yep.
It has pretty decent ridership. And the TSA's perspective is that you never know what's going to happen and you have to make sure that you stay ahead of that. Now, are transit stations in the U.S. considered targets the way that they are in Europe? Like, that's, I think, I mean, we've never seen something in the U.S. like in Madrid or other cities in Europe that have seen attacks in the rail network, but that doesn't mean it would never be attempted. So mm-hmm. that's their perspective.
Uh-huh. I'm curious, speaking of the Olympics, you mentioned in your article that they said they would, how many of these like little machines are there?
They wouldn't say.
Okay.
But we do know that they cost $100,000 each and they spent $428,000 on them.
Okay. So bulk discount for five, maybe?
I can't say.
they did mention that they were only going to use them for major events.
Right.
Like
or
sporting events.
Right.
And
like rallies or another thing that came, like the Women's March, the, you know, inauguration protests.
Yeah.
Super Bowl, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Athletic events. I mean, you know, the soccer stadium is right off the Expo line and the USC stadium is right off the Expo line. The Rose Bowl is off the Gold line. There's big concerts. I mean, there's a lot of like major public space events in LA that happen near Metro and that have enormous crowds at them.
Right.
And there's always heightened security at those stations on those days anyway. So you're more likely to see like sheriff's deputies with canines and like a lot more armed officers than you usually do. So that would not be out of the ordinary if they were to do that on those days.
Yeah.
So the question is the other days, like,
sure,
how would it work?
That Scott, you had a question about related to that. If they're only using it for the like in situations where they'd see the most traffic, you had a question about how many people these things can even
process. Actually, yeah. So this I think it's something that Laura covered in her article as well. Essentially, there is a figure in there about the system being able to handle 2,000 people per hour or something like that.
It's a fraction of ridership on any of those days,
right?
And at the major stations,
especially like where people are most concentrated,
like Union Station, 7th Street, Metro Center, like kind of the big ones. So
do they have a have, or at least have they given you any illustration of how that might look if you're saying people don't actually have to slow down to go through this and be scanned, but only 2,000 people? That sounds like it's still going to result in long lines to get in and potentially out of stations.
I don't know if that's true. I mean, we haven't seen it deployed in a setting where there was more than 2,000 people an hour coming through.
Mm-hmm.
When we watched it, people coming down the escalator, was decently full. It had a person standing on maybe like every other stair. And it was catching each of the people as they came down. So of course there's like multiple entrances to a lot of stations. So the idea that you could like screen every person who comes through is unlikely, I would say. But Metro's also thinking about investing in another type of scanning technology beyond this one, that they also have tested in the last year, that would work slightly differently and that would actually require people to like line up.
Oh, great.
Do we have any details on that one yet?
They tested it last year. It looks much more like your standard like garden variety metal detector with like the silver columns that you walk through. And the thinking there is that this technology that they've invested in now that they've already purchased, it can't do like a full body scan. So if you had like something explosive strapped to your back or you had like a gun tucked into your waistband in the back, the scanner would not pick it up if you were facing toward it. So it doesn't do a full like 360 imaging. And they want to try to figure out how to address what they see as like a vulnerability.
So, well, that brings me to the, speaking of vulnerability, that we haven't seen any major or any kind of terrorist attack on the Metro network. But one issue that Metro is facing currently is ridership.
Right.
How does increasing security gel with the desire to get more people to use the service. I mean, if people have to wait in line for a metal detector, I can't imagine. If you make it more like going to the airport, I can't imagine that's going to get people out of their cars.
Well, I will say, I don't think we know yet whether this security is going to require people to line up or wait. I didn't see any evidence of that, and I think it's too early to say on that front. In terms of ridership, Metro's biggest ridership issue is really on the bus side of things. Buses still represent like more than 70, depending on which month you look at, 70 to 75% of the total ridership in the system. So even though the subway is seeing a slight decrease in ridership, it's nothing compared to the hemorrhaging that's happening on the bus side. So that
was 70 to 75% of the decrease, you said? No, or of the total ridership, and it's falling faster.
A pie of all the riders in Metro, 3/4 of them ride on the bus.
Okay.
I mean, the rail system goes a lot more places than it used to, but LA, like, you can't get anywhere you need to go unless you're willing to get on a bus. And lots of people live where there aren't train stations.
Right.
So,
and the bus is falling faster.
Yeah.
As well.
So one of the reasons why is because rail ridership has been bolstered over the last 2 years by the opening of the Expo Line, which has had a significant ridership increase. I don't remember what the latest figures are, but it's like more than doubled since the extension to Santa Monica opened. And that's helped to offset some pretty significant declines on the Green Line, which runs along the 105, mm-hmm. And some declines on the subway, I'd say like single digit declines.
Yeah, it's like the Green Line's down like 50%, the Blue Line's down like a third, and the Red Line's down like 10.
So the Blue Line like has been traditionally the highest light rail ridership line. If the ridership keeps falling, the Expo Line will soon take that its place.
Yeah.
So anyway, I mean, certainly subway ridership is an issue, but really, if Metro wants to address its ridership issue, it has to look at how to fix the buses.
Yes, and you have your annual Metro Ridership is Cratering article coming out pretty soon, right?
I haven't looked at it in a while. Seems I did like a story in January. You know, I'm like a pariah in the transportation world because I write these stories every 6 months. But, you know, it's kind of, at this point, it was controversial a couple years ago, but it's completely indisputable that Metro is seeing the lowest ridership that they've seen in like at least a decade.
Yeah.
And during the decade of like the most capital funding expansion that the agency has ever had.
People get mad at you for reporting that?
Yeah.
It would be doing them a disservice. I think Laura got everything's great.
An insane amount of flack back in like 2015, 2016 for suggesting that Metro's ridership was falling off of a cliff, which then it kept falling farther.
So it's like at the time that we wrote the story, the ridership was like stepping off the cliff. And that year it plummeted to the bottom. So I feel vindicated by the facts.
Yeah.
We don't have to relitigate.
I honestly feel like I don't want to mock Metro for thinking that security is a concern, because I think that security has proven to be a concern on the transit system in general. Mm-hmm. I wonder about this as like the thing that's going to actually ensure people's safety when
when you say security is a concern, stuff people have under their shirts, that kind of security.
We just said people are leaving the bus system, right?
Yes.
And people have been like stabbed on the buses,
right?
People have also been stabbed on the train, but it's a pretty.
But does a knife fall into the category of something that would?
It would be detected.
It would be.
The question is whether Metro's going to do anything about it.
Right.
I mean, when I work at LA City Hall, I go through a metal detector, and I have like a knife and a fork in my lunch bag every day, and like that shows.
I thought
up.
You were going to say you carry just like
in
a
my
Bowie
laptop bag. No. That type of things that could be used as weapons will show up, but the question is whether or not Metro chooses to pursue that, and that's not clear yet.
It's not clear. Right. I personally am ideologically disposed against the sort of like securitization of public space. That's
You're famously pro crime.
It's neither here nor there. I'm pro crime. It's just who I am. The thing to me is that it seems like the bigger safety issues are more garden variety. Metro has made moves towards trying to get sexual harassment and sexual assault down on the buses. I think that is a much more, I don't know, sort of mindful expenditure of effort.
So one of the difficult things about safety is that people interpret it differently, and it's about how you feel. And it's different based on who you are and where you're going. And Metro, I think, is grappling with that, because if you're a woman, or if you're a person of color, or if you're transgender, or if you're homeless, or whatever the situation might be, you interpret your surroundings differently. And it's really difficult sometimes to address people's like general sense of unease. Mm-hmm. I rode the bus to work last week, and there was someone who harassed me the entire way. And I would have felt more uncomfortable had I been alone on the bus with that person, but that didn't mean I didn't feel uncomfortable surrounded by morning commuters. But is that more important than...
Can't scan for that.
Is that more important than, you know, someone who's carrying a knife or a threat, bomb threat called in? I mean, there are a lot of kind of garden variety threats that the agency deals with that don't get discussed because they're considered confidential, secure. And every major agency in any city that deals with law enforcement issues deals with those types of issues. And it's a question of weighing what is more important and where you want to put your money. But $428,000 in the span of Metro's budget is very small amount of money.
Let's talk about scooters for a little bit. People listening are like, cut the shit. I want to hear about scooters.
You want to hear about very important law enforcement issues? Societal problem.
No.
No, just scooters.
Rental scooters. Pay by the minute.
That's rental, what people want. Electric rental scooters, as I call them in the Times.
You have an article in today, Wednesday's paper, Laura, about the effort to ban scooters across city of LA. As we know, this week, Santa Monica is reviewing their policy on scooters. Bird and Lime self-banned in Santa Monica to kind of get people to
classic self-ban.
Yeah, to radicalize people, what life is like without scooters anymore.
Well, Santa Monica recommended different scooter companies to provide the scooting services,
specifically Uber and Lyft.
Well, Lyft and the scooter company that's owned by Uber,
Jump.
Yeah. So I don't know that really riders would see all that much difference. A scooter is kind of a scooter, but it does show that Bird has a pretty significant base that is willing to show up and do things publicly in support of them.
Well, those are the scooters that are there now.
How many people showed up for the?
I was more than 100.
Wow.
We sent an intern actually to go and do that, and she had a really good time. She's a really interesting she's been doing great scooter stories, including the one about how people are like, you know, hanging bags of poop off of them and throwing them into the ocean, the scooters.
Wow. I've seen bags civilized compared to some of the things that
I don't know if you guys have seen,
they actually put the poop in bags.
First you put the poop in a bag, then you put the bag on the scooter.
I've seen the direct poop scooter interface.
There's like stickers that people are putting on the birds that say turd.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. I mean, some of them are ending up in trees. Anyway, I mean, you know, feelings are running high.
Yeah.
No kidding.
About scooters. I can't believe that's a sentence.
But there's a lot of discussion about what to do in terms of enforcement in LA and whether to ban them here. And your article today was about the fact that scooters are already banned in Los Angeles.
Interestingly, there's some debate over this topic today.
Sure.
So, my story is about a vote that the city council took in March, the Los Angeles City Council. At the time, scooters had shown up in Santa Monica and were being ridden across the border into LA, but certainly
across
not
the border. Yeah.
Those, you know, clearly delineated city borders in Southern California.
The sidewalk gets a little bit worse.
Right. Especially from like Santa Monica to Venice Beach and kind of in that area on the west side, but the companies had not like delivered large amounts of scooters into the city of LA's areas at that point. But dockless bicycles had shown up, and those are the shareable bikes that you can rent that you can like pick up anywhere and leave anywhere.
Mostly Limes, right?
Yeah. There's also, there's a small test going on in Council District 15 down in San Pedro. And there's one at Cal State Northridge in the West Valley. North Valley. So like there were kind of like a handful of them going on, and the city council said, like, you know what? We really need to like put some rules in place for these. It seems like interest is really growing. So we're going to pass a motion asking the city to put together some rules, which is the way that these processes always start. And tacked on to the end of that was an amendment that said, you know what, until these rules are done, there's going to be a moratorium in place that bans these companies from operating here. And at the time when they passed this unanimously, there weren't really no scooters in LA, but the scooters descended like 3 weeks later.
Yeah.
And the way that they'd phrased the motion, they called them dockless transportation systems, quote unquote, which means really like any way to get from point A to point B where you don't have to pick something up and drop it off at a station or at a dock. And
so it sounds that includes like, scooters. It sounds like also might be living in Los Angeles under a car ban.
But you're not allowed to drive from point to point.
Those are dockless transportation vehicles.
If they were rented to you by a company, then yeah. So car sharing would count.
Okay.
So they passed this motion in March. In June, the transportation department sent out a letter to Bird, which at that point had flooded LA with literally thousands of scooters. We don't know the exact number, but we do know that when Bird testified in front of the transportation committee earlier this summer, they said that a cap of 5,000 scooters would be fewer than what they currently have.
Wow.
So the transportation department sent them a letter that was like, hey, we have this moratorium in place. Every single scooter you have in the city of Los Angeles is in violation.
Uh-huh.
Please remove all of them. Except they didn't say please. And then they said any scooter that they saw would be impounded. But nothing happened.
This is the Department of Transportation specifically.
The general manager, Salita Reynolds, sent a letter to Bird saying this. It was like on a Friday afternoon. And it turns out the event that had precipitated this letter was the arrival of a couple dozen Bird scooters in the Arts District.
Mm-hmm.
And downtown, as you guys know, has some of the most like competitive sidewalk space in the city.
Yep.
The sidewalks are more narrow and there's a lot more people walking. There's a lot more people biking. It's just kind of congested. And there were some concerns from the local councilman's office, Jose Huizar, and from the transportation department that introducing scooters into the mix could be like too much for now.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, hey, can you please just not bring these downtown for now? But they communicated that to them by sending a cease and desist letter.
Mm-hmm.
One official described it as reaching out via cease and desist. And of course, nothing happened. I mean, Bird removed the scooters from the Arts District, but they didn't remove them from anywhere else.
Uh-huh.
Right.
And the letter clearly says that there's a moratorium in place across the whole city and that Bird is in violation.
And that moratorium, as you said, is indefinite. It's until there are rules
And actually, it seems like we'll have some rules in place within a couple weeks.
Yeah, the city has come to the table, as they say. They're working out rules. There was a transportation committee tonight.
Public Works Committee.
Oh, sorry. Yeah,
sorry. This is my life. where the transportation committee discussed like the transportation policy side of things, the public works committee and I'm sorry, the public works and gang reduction committee for all the scooter gangs discusses how to enforce those rules. So will the LAPD be in charge of this? Like how will impounding work, etc.? Uh-huh. And those rules are now going to be sent in like a big package to the full city council probably next week.
Wow.
Or maybe the week after once it gets scheduled. So the city is very close. Like
we're
in the waning days of the scooter moratorium.
Okay. I have a question for you. Something that was in your article. There's a quote from Mayor Garcetti speaking to a group of reporters where he said, people like the scooters are fun, but we've seen a big increase in emergency room visits. So they're really dangerous. Is that true?
It is true.
We've seen a lot of people from scooters going to the ER.
I have not canvassed all the hospitals in Greater LA, but I can tell you that I was contacted by someone who works in sports injury medicine at Cedars-Sinai, who's seen 50 injuries in the last
50.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
So yes, it is true. And I mean, look, the reality is like, yes, scooters are a great way to get from point A to point B. They're cheap. They're decently environmentally friendly. They are fun.
Yeah.
But also they're moving at like 15 miles an hour alongside people who walk 3 miles an hour because most people are riding them on the sidewalk. And they're also interacting with drivers at intersections. Like, people are
interacting is a great way.
Well,
to...
I think, well, you know, interacting encompasses a huge range of interactions.
Anything from getting honked like at to being from smeared on the windshield.
Well, anything from a scooter cutting out in front of a driver to vice versa, right?
Yes.
So that huge range of interactions.
Yes,
and
a
like,
lot of interactions.
Inevitably, also no one's wearing a helmet.
Mm-hmm.
And
I have never worn a
helmet. Me neither. So your listeners might be interested to know. It's the state law that you wear a helmet when you ride a scooter.
Yeah. Right.
You're not allowed to ride on the sidewalk, and you're not allowed to ride on commercial corridors with speed limits of higher than 25 miles an hour if there's not a bike lane.
And you have to be older.
And you have to be 18.
18, older than you have to drive a car.
At the risk of like banging the anti-scooter drum too much, like it is true that you see all of those violations every single day across LA. So the question is like, how do you enforce that? And Paul Koretz, the councilman who represents this kind of strange district that goes from like Sherman Oaks all the way into like Beverly Grove and Palms. It's like strangely shaped district. Showed up at the Public Works Committee today and reiterated his position that scooters can be a menace. And that basically if the city were to enforce all of the laws that are currently on the state books, none of these companies would be allowed to operate, period. Because every way that you operate them violates one of the state laws.
Yeah.
And he basically said, the city's going to have to come to terms with this. Either you're going to need to say, we're going to enforce the rules, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and not do it, or you're going to have to put it on hold until we can find a way to make it work with the existing policies.
Mm-hmm.
And it remains to be seen how that's going to work because enforcement hasn't started yet.
So. Is Koretz the most anti-scooter council member, would you say?
He's the most verbally anti. Yeah. I think there's been some quiet watchers. I mean, there's 15 council members, and there's only been about four who've said anything publicly.
Anyone said anything? Koretz
is more
on the
pro front line. Koretz
knows when issues are important to his constituency and speaks up about them. And there are a lot of people in his district that have complained about scooters on sidewalks and injuries and being parked in weird ways in front of people's houses and all these things that are happening.
Yeah.
I think he's also hearing from residents who live in areas like Palms and other like neighborhoods that are closer to transit, Westwood near UCLA, who are reminding him that also they're finding that scooters are a great way to move around and that they want him to find a way to kind of make these rules work. So he's definitely in one of those districts that's being pulled like both directions.
So you, in your opinion, the, like the, what his request is for there to be a temporary ban, you don't see that as like a backdoor way to sort of just shut them down permanently. You do think he does eventually want to find a working model of regulation for them?
I mean, I can't ascribe
read his mind.
I can't ascribe motivations to people and what they're planning in the future, but he said to me when I interviewed him, and he said publicly many times that he sees it as temporary. So I'm going to take him at his word, especially because the rules are moving through city council by LA standards very quickly. It's only been months.
Yeah, that's so, really fast.
Look, I mean, by LA standards, it's fast. Mm-hmm. So everything's relative, but they're literally moving at like light speed.
Yeah, no, it does. I mean, it sounds funny even to me as somebody who like habitually watches LA politics. But when you say that they're voting on this within the next week or two, that does seem like it's at breakneck speed compared to some of the other things we talked about.
I mean, like, for example, Airbnb regulations have been under discussion for years. Haven't been final. But I mean,
street vending, all these things we talked about.
What's interesting is like these scooters are following the Uber playbook, right? Which is like you ask forgiveness rather than permission.
Yep.
But what's different is that, and where the analogy breaks down is that Uber and Lyft aren't regulated by local governments in LA. In California, they're regulated by the State Utilities Commission. So the city had no role in like the growth of Uber or the way that it was. The way that it kind of spread across the city. The only place where they had any say about it at all was at the airport,
right,
which is where you saw like a big fight over fingerprinting drivers and more thorough background checks. And that was like the only opportunity the city had to insert itself and like try to, in their view, improve on the state level regulations. Scooters are completely different. Like they're squarely within the city's purview. So they're getting to be a little bit more hands-on.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us, Laura. Yeah. Are you so glad you didn't have to move to El Segundo?
I'm going once a week.
Oh, you are? Mm-hmm. Four in the downtown bureau.
Yeah, the downtown bureau is above the last bookstore building on Spring Street. That's really nice. Cool. I'm now unfortunately showing up at City Hall sweaty every single time because it's a 15-minute walk. It's really hot.
It used to be like a 1 second.
It was literally like a 2-minute walk. So I miss that. However, I'm getting more steps in, so that's a pro.
Yeah, food and options are a little bit different.
The drive to El Segundo is... long. Brutal. But very long. We are optimistic about local ownership. So yeah,
absolutely.
I think so far it's been that. Worth it.
Good luck with the ongoing guild negotiations.
Thank you. We are hoping to have a contract soon.
Come back
before
soon
or talk after about scooter regulations.
After.
After.
That would be like breaking news if we got a contract in the next week. So, but we hope by the end of the year.
Lars, all these LA Times reporters are so cool.
Yeah, it's great.
Thank you for listening. Big guest. We just want to tip. The most credible guest, even with all these LA Times reporters that we've gotten, even more credible than them.
Not to impugn their credibility. But maybe a little bit.
Is who we have coming up
yeah.
In our next episode that we'll release Monday.
Yes.
And so stay tuned to LA Podcast.